They're calling for nothing less than the resurgence of mass movements to challenge what King opposed in his last year of life. Poverty, systemic racism, rampant militarism, and capitalism and its effects on global climate systems. King would be proud. For more information, contact Pennsylvania/PoorPeople'sCampaign.org from Imprisoned Nation. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Who is it?
It's me, Dave. Open up, man. I got the stuff.
Who is it?
It's me, Dave, man. Open up. I got the stuff.
Who?
It's Dave, man. Open up. I think the cops saw me come in here.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with me.
Who?
Dave, man. Open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave. Come on, man. Open up. I think the cops
saw me. Dave's not here.
No, man. I'm Dave, man. Hey, come on, man.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with
Who?
Me. Dave, man. Open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave.
Dave's not here.
No, man, I am Dave, man. Will you... Come on. Open up the door, will you? I got the stuff with me. I think the cops saw
me. Who is it?
Oh, what the hell is it? Come, man, open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the goddamn
Dave?
Door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing.
Happy birthday to you.
Have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties. Or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either.
How about trying this future on for size?
Even better, burn them CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better.
Spectators, but not participants.
You can't legislate people's behavior.
To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
I want to let you know about something that needs to happen real soon. You got to save Free Radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org. Or you could send mail to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061.
Hey, my name is Mike True. I'm living in New Orleans, Louisiana. But when I want to get an earful of what's going on in Santa Cruz and California and all the happening things with the buzz, I listen to the Tangerine Dream Team with Coral Reef at 101.3 Freak Radio. And it's all good.
Is there a neighbor you are suspicious of, but lack the motivation to call the federal government? Are you positive the person who lives across the street is involved in Al-Qaeda-like activity, but wonder what's in it for you to call the FBI? Well, the Department of Homeland Security is proud to present the War on Terror Megamix. For every member of a terrorist organization you reveal, the Department of Homeland Security will send you this great compilation CD featuring hits from the 70s and 80s, like this great hit from The Who. Or how about this great song from the 80s? That's right. All of these classic hits can be yours. It doesn't matter if they're guilty or innocent. If someone you know is acting strangely, you could be listening to songs like this. Or even this great one-hit wonder. To get this great compilation, all we need is a suspicious party's address, ethnic background, hair, blood, or urine sample, the Middle East-based terrorist group you suspect they are involved in, and $4 for shipping and handling. And there's even a track for the kids.
Who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? Say who?
The War on Terror Megamix can be yours right now for just doing your patriotic duty. Inform and order today.
Welcome to another edition, home recorded edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. It's July 26th. Yep. July 26th. And we got, interesting stuff coming up. Tenants' rights activist and rent control advocate Cynthia Berger is going to be with us for half an hour. At least her recorded voice will. There's going to be many reports from the Red Church and unfortunate doings and complaints against Sexton Steve, who's the I call him the soup Nazi at the Red Church. Having had numerous encounters with him, just my opinion. Well, it's also the opinion of a few others that he inflicts rules that are inappropriately harsh and actually ill befitting a meeting supposedly there to draw people into a Christian message, particularly for homeless and hungry people. And we're going to be also looking at or listening to some bits and pieces from a week or two ago, particularly an interview with Amber of Berkeley. We've talked to repeatedly on the show. She's an RV dweller who continues to struggle on to maintain a right to sleep in her vehicle along with fellow vehicle dwellers. So let's get into it.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And let's begin with a few updates. Lee Wilson, who is a street singer and local vehicle dweller, I'm told, as well as a worship leader at the Monday night Calvary Episcopal Church the Red Church services, who was jailed and has been held, I'm not sure on what charges, for a period of time, has been released. And presumably he'll be back at the Red Church doing some strumming next Monday for those of you who go to the 5 o'clock service or the 6 o'clock meal there. That's at Cedar and Lincoln Streets. And here's a somewhat longer update from Mel Nunez, who's also a regular at the Calvary Episcopal Church and a member of the Association of Faith Communities for quite a while. He had some information about the proposed car campground out at the Seventh-day Adventist campground area in Soquel, kind of out in the boonies, but apparently with bathroom and shower facilities and so forth. There was rumors that was going to open up this fall. Apparently not. His email reads as follows. I lack the insider knowledge that would be helpful. I do know that many months of effort were invested in a car and RV campsite spearheaded by John Showalter of St. John's Episcopal and Suzanne McLean of Peace United. The AFC board announced in May that the Seventh-day Adventist campground and facilities were approved for this use by the church owners and county authorities starting in September and operating through May of 2019. However, at the July 5th AFC meeting, we heard the county representative, Rain Marr, and he's not sure about that, if that's who it was, would not be able to obtain funding for campground operations. My understanding is that churches were going to supply staffing and monitoring. I was surprised by the rapid development and then dissolution of this well-intentioned pilot program. I believe the folks most involved have hopes of a campground becoming a reality at the same site in the fall of 2019. Our next Association of Faith Communities gathering will be Thursday, August 2nd, that's a week from today, at 5 o'clock at the Red Church, and that's apparently open to the public, so you can go there if you'd like. Any of you listeners want to ask some probing questions, perhaps? I mean, why not just start doing it and do what you can with it? It's the property is available. That's always been an issue. That's something activist Brent Adams raised, I believe, when we talked about it at our last show. You could probably receive a more factual update, Mel continues, at that time. And there's also going to be having a presentation by Miley McGrew-Fried, I hope I'm pronouncing her name properly, regarding the downtown library outreach to folks in need as well. As you may remember, Miley was one of the instrumental people in setting up a Thursday morning kind of coffee and service provider chit-chat that happens outside the library. I remember last going to it when we were... some were doing the Freedom Sleeper, the last days of the Freedom Sleepers, where they were driven away by City Manager Martine Bernal and Police Chief Andy Mills with essentially illegal arrests and no shelter for folks. Although soon thereafter, in response to people moving to the downtown area with their campsites, there was for a brief number of months, there was a San Lorenzo campground opened up, which, was the first ever tolerated campground in such a public way, with actually city-provided porta-potties, wash stations, trash pickups, and toleration of drug activity. You might say, what's that, toleration? And the answer is, yeah, that's what that is. If people are self-medicating, so to speak, or if you engage in what we call harm reduction by having them together in an area where they're more likely to be able to receive social services. Although it was criticized by some as an open-air drug market. That's going to happen at different places in town if it didn't happen there, and I'm sure it is. Anyway, Mel had some further thoughts, Mel Nunez, on this sad situation with the Seventh-day Adventist camp out in Soquel being essentially delayed or stalled for another year. He noted there was a fundraiser at the Portuguese Hall at the end of May, and the organizer, apparently former labor organizer, John Showalter, spoke about it in a real kind of pep talky kind of way, that it had showers, bathrooms, big piece of property was suddenly available for the general public, or at least some of them. But the issue was stalled. Showalter went away on vacation. And in spite of all the we're going to get this done talk, apparently nothing happens is what's going on. People go away for the summer and then, actually they don't have to worry about places to sleep or park their vehicles. And the city, of course, likes the idea because it's way the hell out in the boonies, but at least it's an RV and car camp for some people. Apparently 50 were considered to be, that was the number that they were intending. Mel's wondering why they can't come up with a space, a tiny space for women and children downtown. And he's going to be asking at this next meeting on the on August 2nd and invites others to ask, where do we stand? You know, are we committing money and just holding our breath and waiting for Daddy Warbucks from the city or the county to come and help? That's a Thursday meeting at 5 o'clock coming up with Miley McGrew coming and speaking there as well about the library situation, which is a matter of concern for homeless folks. And that's another announcement I'm about to make. I went to one of the library, Don't Bury the Library meetings, run by Gene and Michael Brocklebent. I think I've got that name wrong. Let me see if I can get it. I'll get it properly enunciated in a moment. But, yeah, why don't we go into that now? So it's Gene Brocklebank. My apologies, Gene, for mispronouncing your name. And there was a group of about 16 folks, including a Sentinel reporter, and a woman named Susan, who apparently was, and I missed the beginning of the meeting, a spokesperson for the some administrative aspect, either the library or some city agency closely connected with the library. And she was attempting to field some rather probing questions from Gene, Michael, and a lot of other folks there who were, it seemed pretty much to a person, critical of the plan to, there is a plan, as many of you listeners know, to essentially, well, as they put it, bury the library, essentially use funding that was created in Measure S, I believe that was the measure, and instead of renovating the library, as seems to be what they claimed they were going to be doing, they will use it to move the library into the either the ground floor or the basement, I'm not sure which, of a parking structure which will be built on the bones of, or the former site of the farmer's market at Cathcart and Cedar Streets. And this is something that has a lot of impact, I think, on the entire community, but particularly on homeless people as well. The library being one of the, although a diminishing in its friendliness toward the homeless community, one of the places where people can go during the day to get away from the heat, to get away from harassment by police. So they have to face, of course, harassment by security guards. And don't fall asleep or you'll get evicted for a day, a week, a month, a year, as David Chirazis and Cynthia Matthews and the library board created back in 2014 over the objections of Huff, this new harsh policy, which then spread to the Parks and Rec, which I've talked about in past shows. So there were a number of issues brought up by activists concerned with maintaining the library at its current site and using the $23 million of a and there were four proposals, I think, the for varyingly increased amounts of money to spend on the library. The one favored by the city council seems to be, or by the staff anyway, and probably by the city council at the moment, is to simply abandon the building to whatever, possibly rumors have it, city staff offices, and then move it, create a new library space in a, underneath the parking structure, which will then be used to, and with the farmer's market being moved to an indoor structure on the other side of Pacific Avenue. I think a number of new concerns were properly brought up at this meeting, a number of new questions. I wasn't happy with, frankly, the gentility which the group showed this essentially establishment propaganda person. And I guess they were pleased to have gotten her to come at all. There, Gene later expressed to me concerns in an email that I was, she worried that I would be, I don't know, somehow offending people by saying something, or she was nervous about my being there. I did make a recording of the event. I'd come in late, and I generally do make a recording of what seemed to me to be public meetings. And I didn't really have any clarity that this wasn't a public meeting. When I mentioned afterward to Mike Brocklebent, that's Brocklebank. Sorry about that. I'm getting a little muddled in my technical activity here, but hopefully you can proceed. If it were me, and of course it isn't, and I didn't organize this, and Gene and Michael and many others have been working to bring this issue to public notice and ask the important questions and challenge the city. They're using a rather conventional road to do so. They think that by going to the, I think there's a walkthrough coming up on August 1st or 2nd at the library where the proponents of the latest stuff the library under a parking structure plan and turn the new library into the old library building into some other use. It's proceeding along a sort of a fast track, and I'm worried that simply making a few protesting sounds at city council, even, you know, and genteel, please, because everyone at this meeting was terribly genteel to Susan. Isn't going to do it. And I'm not saying you have to be mean, nasty, or abusive, but I think there has to be some stronger statement made, and maybe it will be. I mean, I don't know. And there was some interesting information that came out of this meeting, and I'm going to be talking more about that, I hope, on Sunday. I mean, I've asked Gene and Michael Brocklebank to be on the air, and I think they have... I kind of doubt they're going to, because they were upset about the fact that I was recording the meeting. I came in late, as I said, and I wasn't aware it wasn't a public meeting. There was no guard at the door. There was no close to the public. There were 16 people there at the meeting. I had heard it was available to people. I think there was something about RSVPing or something, because they wanted to know how many people were coming, but I got no indication it was a private meeting. And afterward, I told, when Michael told me that and was very severe with me about, you shouldn't be recording this stuff, and I said, why not? It's an important public record that it be done, and it's important that we know what these city officials are saying. It's being done with a group of people. I mean, what, you can't keep this information in a kind of an elitist corner. But out of respect for what his concerns were and the work he and Gene had put into this, I told him, you know, I won't be broadcasting the tape. Well, I think I should, really, and I'm feeling a bit like I'm inappropriately backing off in ways that perhaps I shouldn't be. But different activists work in different ways, and so I'm hopeful that people will do what they can to defend this library, and I will be on Sunday, I'll be trying to give more information. Based upon, I don't think the information that came out of this meeting is secret. I sure as hell am not going to regard it as secret. But people have a concern, and I often have too. I try to respect the concern about not recording or playing publicly people's commentary or meetings without their permission, without at least letting them know I'm doing it. I mean, I've gotten into trouble at city council for actually. When I do let them know I'm doing it, because they want to impose other restrictions, and I have been arrested for it, though never convicted of any crimes for doing it. But I think this kind of information has to go out to the community. And I'm sorry I can't give you more information about it, but I believe the place to go for that is go to Don't Bury the Library website. In fact, I'll take a look right now and see if anything new is appearing on that website. So it looks like the only information on the Don't Bury the Library website is, there's a number of links here. There's News and Events, which has their statement, and there's, don't know if there's any mention of this upcoming August 1st or 2nd walkthrough or the next meeting of the City Council, which is supposedly going to be the final nail in the coffin. There are a number of links here. I suggest people go to this website. A lot of pictures, a lot of information. Check it out. And there's some updates. And there's this update about their statement on June 19th to the City Council. They believe that moving the library, as I do, would diminish it as an integral part of the city's vital center. voters who passed Measure S, which gives $23 million to this, for this cause, never had a clue they were voting for a new downtown library and a new parking structure, not found anywhere in the 13-page ballot measure language nor in news stories. There was apparently the proposed project came from the city's public works director and the county's library director, presented to the council a year and a half ago without any prior input from the public as to whether this was okay from the residents. I'm reading from the DBTL, that's Don't Bury the Library, statement to the June 19th City Council study session. And there's a lot more in this statement, and it's signed by Gene Brocklebank. And it's not Michael Brocklebank, it's Michael Lewis. My apologies, Michael, for screwing up your name there. And, yeah, definitely check out this website for more information. And I'm going to grab the phone. Maybe there'll be an interesting caller while I record this show. And that was our faithful Free Radio staff trying to put together post shows for today. That's what they do. So let's go musical, and I'll be back, and we'll do more.
Nobody likes you, nobody cares. Nobody wants you, nobody cares. To extend a greeting aid, connecting lands. Life is just a jaded game to them. They get it a chance.
Freedom is Free by Chicano Batman, or part of it. If you want to catch other versions of it, or maybe more easily intelligible versions of it, you can find it on YouTube. Check it out. So Huff had a meeting, that's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, yesterday. And we meet every other Wednesday, and next Wednesday is going to be a meeting of the broader coalition group, which Huff is a member, Conscience and Action. That was a group that tried to deal with and is still trying to deal with, and has had some small success in dealing with the closing of bathroom facilities as part of the overall anti-homeless attack on the poor by the gentrification masters of Santa Cruz. It's hard to say, you know, whether it certainly has been a long time practice by the staff, and it's a favorite of recently incoming city council members. We're not talking as much about the minority, Crone and Brown, although I haven't found them terribly helpful recently. Anyway, Huff was largely responsible for the most recent protest activity at Loudoun Nelson Center, and I played some of that in the last couple of shows. We tabled in Laurel Park next to Loudoun Nelson Center. We went to the authorities at the Loudoun Nelson Center to try to get a bathroom use for an older woman. I don't know if she was completely disabled or partially disabled, but she has had some health problems that involve things like bathrooms. She lives indoors herself, but she was so upset by the current problems. She's talked about it on the air. Ursula, you may have heard her in previous shows, tried to use Loudoun Nelson, turned away, told her to go to the police station next door, or actually half a block away, went there. No, you can't use our bathrooms. Came back to Loudoun Nelson. No, you still can't use our bathrooms. They're right down the hall. All you got to do is give her the code to get in. No, we can't. You're not a participant here at the Loudoun Nelson Center. Go walk 4 blocks to the Depot Park. She did. The porta potties were, as far as she was concerned, unusable. But somebody finally agreed to let her use the, well, pointed out to her the depot bathrooms, which I hadn't been aware that they were open during the day, but they're kind of distant from the downtown, and maybe that's one of the reasons that they're open. In any case, we did protests there, and we signed up a number of people urging the reopening of the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms and explaining the difficulties and the really humiliating and medically damaging concerns that people have when they don't have access to bathrooms. We're not just talking about hepatitis A, but, you know, if you're homeless, crapping in your pants, pissing in your pants, getting, you know, having to take a pee in the bushes and risk, you know, not just despoiling the environment, but getting a very hostile reception, maybe even a criminal charge and an arrest from the police, as has happened. So that's still an ongoing struggle. We talked about that at the Huff meeting, and we are working on documenting the process by which, I think her name is Iseth Ray, and I'm probably mispronouncing your name. Sorry about that, Iseth. She's the recreation supervisor at Loudoun Nelson Community Center, and apparently the boss there, although I'm not entirely clear about that, and I hope I'm not blaming her for decisions other people have made. But in the massive trove of documents that we're trying to go through, it does seem that in February she made that announcement or decision. Not sure it was one, the other, or both. It certainly was the announcement. And I suspect it was also the decision, but don't know for sure. We also have some video recently posted by Wes White, Salinas activist, you may know if you're a regular listener to this show, who's with Monterey County Homeless Advocates and who came over to video what was going on. A lot of this, the audio portion of this, I played because I was also simultaneously recording this on an earlier show. But I'm going to play a little of Ursula's Odyssey, we could call this, the woman who was trying to get access to a bathroom. And it's not all that audible, but some of it is, and it's, to me, rather infuriating. So here we go. And the scene opens, I think, in Loudoun Nelson Center as the initial request is made to use the bathrooms. And here we go. And she is being told, Ursula is being told by a man behind the counter that bathrooms only available for people who are participating in Loudoun Nelson activities, which, of course, Laurel Park is adjacent to Loudoun Nelson. It's kind of the key activity that's happening in Loudoun Nelson is the 24-hour, well, it's actually only open now during the day, but it's the park. But Now here's more.
Go to the police department at Depot Fry or... Depot Fry or the parking police department. Oh,
I needed to go to that. Yes, so the police department is the closest one.
Okay. Right across the street.
Let's go there.
It's not open, it's not available today.
And here she is asking to use the bathroom at the police department and being turned down, told that it is a training session. For my money, and again, what I would do, and I was there simply, I recorded some of the audio, but this portion is Wes got on video. You can go through, you can see the video by looking for Reopen the Loudoun Nelson Bathrooms on his Monterey County Homeless Advocates website, I believe, or go to John Doe 13K on YouTube. That's John, and then next word, Doe 13K, YouTube, and you'll find this video, which is easier to hear and easier to see, but here's a... Here's a little more of it. As I said, for what I would do, when, well, the fact that she is so obliging in going from one place to another, it always depresses me when people kind of try to fit themselves into these formats. But she's, you know, trying to be a good girl and go by the rules. Unfortunately, if the rules are crazy, you can't give them credibility. And that's what I'm hoping people are eventually going to conclude in this situation.
Okay.
So she's turned away by the police.
But typically they are open.
Okay.
Yes, I need to use the bathroom.
And now she's back at Loudoun Nelson Center, asking again to use the bathroom because she couldn't use the police bathroom, which they told her was open, and which the police department told me was also open. When I called them several hours earlier on a week ago Tuesday when we had this protest.
The director of the police station, I went there, they directed me back.
I came to check with my boss.
They directed you back?
Yeah, they said it wasn't open today. Okay.
And
I can call you
back. And Ursula is explaining to the man behind the counter that she was directed back here. And his immediate reaction is to walk over to the Parks and Recreation guard woman who's been kind of walking around telling people not to have their dogs in the park and they can't, you know, they can't have their property leaning against this and that and maintaining a sort of, to me, an uncomfortable police presence. But no doubt all under orders, you know, because that's her job, that sort of thing, which in the past I've discussed this, that it doesn't carry any water for me, doesn't cut the mustard for me to say that if you, what you're doing is simply wrong. Although I understand, you know, if you want to, you know, get your salary, you have to do your job or you have to go find some other job, you know. Anyway, the staff guy is asking the Parks and Rec. I don't know if she's armed with a taser, but I'm told that Parks and Rec people are armed with tasers. And so he goes to her to ask her what to do. Here's a bathroom that's essentially 100 feet away up the hallway that she's being denied access to after she's walked all the way to the police station, all the way back, and now she's being told to walk four blocks to another place.
I just was saying...
No. Yeah, they said they had a training today, so it was closed for the day.
No.
But typically it's open.
And you can't hear much of this, but Ursula pointed out later in an interview that I had with her that they didn't really believe her when she said she couldn't use the bathrooms at the police department. And so there is this really hostile... skeptical attitude towards the most basic needs of the public here, which Huff members discussed yesterday. And we didn't cook up a new protest site announcement date yet. But that may happen soon. As I said, at the next meeting of Conscience and Action, which happens Wednesday, August 1st at 10:30 at the Loudoun, Sub Rosa Cafe, and will be about Loudoun Nelson Center and I think another other issues. You can go and become a part of that action, or you can contact Huff at Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423-4833. That's area code 831-423-4833 if you want to do something to reopen those damn bathrooms and restore some basic rights to of the most elementary kind, not just for the benefit of the homeless, for the benefit of the whole community. So jumping back again now to the fate of people in their RVs, I did get an email from Santa Barbara activist Peter Marin, also a poet and a writer, that there's been some movement, not so much on RVs, which he's struggling to fight the so-called oversized RV ordinance, which essentially bans people from using RVs in the Santa Barbara area, the downtown area, or parking them, I should say, not using them. You can keep driving them as long as you got the money to pay for it. They have a kind of a park during the night and sleep program for some people in vehicles, but during the day you're screwed. You don't know where to go. You have to find some way to get either outside the city limits, and then you may get harassed by county authorities. In Salinas, a similar situation has developed, and Wes White, who is mainly based in Salinas, has raised that issue there, bringing people, RV dwellers, you may have remembered from past shows, to the Salinas City Council to urge a fight back on that. His latest announcement is not a positive one. I'm looking on his Facebook page, and I'll do it from memory because I'm having trouble actually locating the text, but Seaside City Council passed an RV ban in Seaside. Salinas passed such a ban. And it's, let me see if I can get more specific. So a few days ago, Wes posted this. Deputy Chief Manny Gonzalez mentioned the city would be giving warnings 30 to 45 days after the oversized vehicle ordinance went into effect. Just got a tip that the RVs on Griffin are being moved along. More updates in the morning. And there are numerous comments under that, which I'm looking for. Denise Johnson writes, I wish we had another location, but they all have to be more conscious about keeping the area clean. Again, blame the RV dwellers, not the crazy laws, is, I guess, the go-to strategy here. Have you seen a mess down there? Wes replies, at this moment, are you sure that that's the reason they're being told to move? Keeping the area clean is not the main priority for the city. The mere appearance of affordable housing in the way of vehicles or tents repulses them. Nobody's collecting rent from them. It's not fair. They're trespassing on public property. That's more than enough. It's open discrimination against people too poor to pay rent. At which point Denise Johnson replies, I didn't mean for the city to clean up the mess. It was mentioned in a few articles. However, instead of moving people out who are living in their motorhomes trying to survive the best way they can, find a place where they can park. We are all a paycheck away from being homeless. We need to somehow figure out a way to help those living in motorhomes. I don't have all the answers, but we have to find a way. I put together hygiene packs to give out along with bottled water, snacks, through the group Salinas Tent City. I'm trying to help as much as I can as I live on a strict budget and don't work due to health reasons. And now let's hear from a home dweller, an RV home dweller in Berkeley, who we've heard from before, Amber Whitson, who I spoke to about a week ago up there.
Our meeting's much time.
So it's about 6 o'clock. I'm down here at Page and 4th in Berkeley on July 15th. I'm talking with
Amber Whitson of Berkeley Marina Friends on Wheels.
A familiar voice for those of you who've been listening to the last few radio shows. And Amber, you've just sort of given us a preliminary kind of rundown of this meeting coming up in about an hour. I guess there'll be maybe residents from 8 of the remaining vehicles, of which there were previously 40.
Butch, there was, no, there was never 40. No, there was 26 vehicles. And, no, there's 26 people, 15 vehicles, and now we've gradually reduced our numbers till now we are 11 vehicles, I believe. And I'm not sure what the count on people is. I'll have to check the spreadsheet.
And did the other 15 go places that you're familiar with, or did they just sort of disappear from the scene?
People have kind of just disappeared from the scene. We're really not sure where a few people went, actually. One man is up at his niece's place, right up the street from where we're at right now, and not sure where his baby mama and their son went. They got swooped up by a City of Berkeley outreach team a few days ago, and I don't know if anybody's seen them since then. So who knows, they might have got disappeared. You know how Berkeley works.
No, but I'm always willing to learn. 14 other vehicles are they the same size as this relatively big RV we're parked behind?
We have a few of them this size, and we have one or two of them that are even bigger, actually. We have most of them are around this size, though. A couple smaller ones, but this is about the average size of the RVs. Yeah.
How would you describe the size of this vehicle?
It's about a 20-something foot Class A RV. Looks like a big old bread box on wheels, pretty much. Probably mid-80s, I would think. Most of them are from the 80s, 90s at the latest. Just an old lived-in RV. You know, they have these things free all over Craigslist. You know, it's, you get to take your chances on whether they work or not. But they have RVs that they're giving away all the time on Craigslist. You just got to have a way to tow them away from where they're at, and they might just need a new battery. You know, and that's really, you know, when you get down to trying to live within your means in the Bay Area, that's pretty much where you got to live, is in a vehicle. Unless your means are like old money or, you know, a trust fund, you know, you're going to be living in a vehicle or on the streets. That's just how the reality is of the prices for housing in the Bay Area.
Now, is that how you got your vehicle?
Me and my boyfriend were blessed. His mom drove our RV all the way down from Clear Lake in one gear and gave it to us for free. She got it for free off of a friend's property. Because they'll almost pay you to take them up in Lake County. Because people have them sitting on their properties and they just want them gone. So she got it from a friend's property for free and then came down and gave it to us for free.
Now, are these vehicles from people who have essentially died? Or are they people who have moved up on the economic ladder? What's generally the story? Is there a story?
Well, one woman got hers from an old couple that bought the RV, used it once, and then it was in some movie, American Idiots or something like that, and then it was back up on their property for who knows how many years until I believe they gave it away to her. They made it most of the way down here, and then it died in some canyon just north of here, and then she had a tow truck bring it all the way down to the Berkeley Marina and got it running. And now it's hers. That's the one right across the street, down on the next block down. You know, everybody's got a different story on how they ended up with their vehicles. One of our community members, his father passed away, and they were living in traditional housing, but it cost so much to pay for his father's funeral that they weren't going to be able to afford to keep making mortgage payments, and so they bought the RV with the last... He sold his car, actually, for them to be able to afford the RV, but it's a really nice RV. Let me tell you, it's one of the nicer ones in our community.
So it's beyond the 90s?
Actually, I think it isn't from the 90s. It might be beyond the 90s. It's really nice. It's tall. It's the tallest RV out of all of ours. It's not two stories, but it looks like it. But it's not. It's just big, and he's got it really, really clean inside, really nice looking. He's got two kids of his own.
What's the cost of a new RV these days?
Oh, boy, I have no idea. Thousands, hundreds of thousands if you get a fancy enough one. Tens of thousands, I think, is about the average. I wouldn't know how many tens, but definitely tens of thousands is the average.
Is there any advantage for those who have money in getting a newer RV, or are the older ones as good?
Well, I don't think they make RVs out of metal anymore, so I would say that if you can find one that's metal and older, you'd probably be better off. I wouldn't want to be driving down the road in fiberglass anything. You know, we have three vehicles that are associated with our household. You know, I have a pop-up trailer, and then we have the RV, and then I have my van I just bought just a couple weeks ago, and all of them are metal. The pop-up has canvas for the sides, but the body of it is metal, and the RV is from 78. It's metal. My van is from 1980. It's metal. I just don't feel safe going down the road in fiberglass or rubber or whatever. They make, you know, newfangled things out of, including RVs. You know, I've seen a lot of newer RVs that didn't belong to anybody in our community that, you know, once it gets hit, you see it's been hit, and you see the fiberglass shreds sticking out, and it just doesn't seem safe. There's things flying at 70 miles an hour past you, 60 miles an hour past you even. It's just not safe to be in a fiberglass box, you know?
Is there much connection between newer RV owners and folks in your community or folks who own older RVs?
Define connection.
Solidarity.
Yes, actually, there is a man who was parking in the same parking lot that we were down at the marina, who actually owns a security business, who is retired. He's a retired law enforcement, retired Marine, and current security company owner and security officer trainer. And he lives in an RV, big, nice Class A RV, and goes to work in the city during the day. And at night sleeps in his really nice fancy RV wherever he can park it, you know. And he used to bring his pastries every day when he'd come home from work, actually. He's really good people, you know. I mean, it's there's such a fine line between full-timers, quote-unquote, and people who have no choice but to be full-timers. You know, full-timers being people that live in RVs full-time as opposed to living in a house full-time. You know, but frequently the term is used to describe people that choose to live in RVs because they have the means to afford to do that instead if they choose, you know, as opposed to people who that's living within their means is living in an RV, like the rest of us.
Now you, Amber, you were previously, you and your boyfriend were living outside prior to about, what, a year and a half ago?
Oh, no. Me and my current boyfriend, we've been living in this RV for almost 3 years now. But prior to 2014, me and my former partner, who actually sometimes stays in one of our accessory vehicles, me and my former partner, Phil, we lived out on the Albany Bulb for 7.5 years.
Right.
Yep. That was heaven. If I could go back to living on the Bulb, legally speaking, I would do that over living in a vehicle. But if I can't live out in nature, then I would much rather be in a vehicle. I can't see buying into the farce of housing in the Bay Area, that housing really is for people that trying to work their way up from the bottom, you know. You'll die in debt. I'm not looking to die in debt. In fact, I just started working on my credit recently, and I'm actually doing a decent job at it. Because I can
paying off your student loan?
Oh, no. Paying off my credit card as I use it, because I never had credit cards before. My mom taught me to not believe in credit cards as credit cards. They were for emergencies only, you know, and you pay it off as soon as you can. And that's what I believed they were for, and I never had reason to have one till I realized that my credit was so bad I couldn't get care credit to assist with vet bills if I needed it. So I decided to start working on my credit, and built my credit up from 530 to 649, and I was just approved for care credit the other day for my dog little guy, which is good because he just had a seizure, so I actually need it, and I was able to get it, so now I can take him to the vet.
In essence, you need to be in debt to get credit.
You just need to be able to show you're responsible when you're in debt to be able to get credit, because I pay off my credit card. I mean, I spend off of it only to pay it back immediately, just to show them, like, look, my word is good. That's basically what you got to do, is show them you can handle the responsibility of debt to be able to build credit, you know, which is understandable, you know. I just don't overspend.
Have you found any discrimination against people who simply do not use credit cards for the same reason that your mother advised you to... you know, operate in the black rather than in the red?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I said, I mean, I applied for care credit a few years ago for my dog, little guy, when he had an accident back then. And I was denied because I had no credit history at all. And that's
no history of debt problems either.
Oh, yeah, but that's bad enough. You have no history, that's no history. You might as well have terrible credit, really. I mean, you're not trying to work your way up from as far back once you do start working on your credit. But to any creditor, you might as well have bad history if you have no history, because they have no way of knowing that they can trust you, you know, which is kind of understandable. It might be the only wise thing that, you know, big businesses and money holders do, is trying to make sure that they can trust the people that they entrust with stuff. But aside from that, I generally try and keep away from the whole, whatever you call it, corporatism or whatever, you know, and there's a word for it, starts with a C, capitalism. I try and avoid the capitalism thing. I work, that's why I'm Berkeley's nearly free RV mechanic, you know. If people can cover their parts, sometimes even if they can't, I'll help them fix their vehicle, you know. They don't have to pay me for the work, just as long as they can finance their own parts, you know, and be patient with my crazy work schedule, because I'm not always as fast at getting to stuff as other people. That's probably why I'm not a professional. Oh, and train's going to go by. These things are incredibly loud. Oh.
It's not as loud as the folks next to the BART.
I couldn't live next to the BART train either. But it is actually, it's hard to say whether it's louder or not as loud, actually. Like, I'm not a fan of train whistles. That's one of the things about living out there on the water, man. All the wind blows sound on land. even though the train tracks are like right at the margins of the main part of land, you know, that not often, does only when the Santa Anas blow, does the sound actually get blown out towards the water from the train tracks. So, like, I'm pretty much away from the train track sound out there, beyond the train tracks, out at the very, very margins of this city we call Berkeley.
Amber, how many vehicles would you say in the last year you've helped repair?
Wow, boy, that'd be a hard one. Maybe 30? Probably 30? 20 or 30? Probably closer to 30. Because cars and RVs and generators, if you count generators, probably closer to 35, maybe 40. I work on a lot of things. You know, I just won't work for people that suck. It's my only standard. Even if you can't cover your parts immediately, if you can cover your parts later, I'll cover your parts for you for now. But if you suck, I'm not helping you or anything. You can be stuck by the side of the road. That's fine. You probably deserve to be there.
Is there anybody you want to introduce us to? I don't know if I'm going to...
Hold on, I can't hear you because the machine's going by.
No problem. I don't know if I'm going to last for the meeting. And also, I don't know, I don't think anybody wants to be recorded in the meeting, probably.
I don't know if they mind too much. I mean, they might. I think they wouldn't mind if you... I'm sure they wouldn't mind if you sat in on it, though. I mean, everybody ought to give me the okay for you to sit in on the meeting if you'd like. And some of them might be willing to talk to you after or before the meeting, because people are probably going to show up a little bit before 7, I would think, since there's some of them are coming from Richmond. And other ones, like I said, just drove to the lake in Lake Merritt. I mean, to the lake in Oakland, over at Lake Merritt for the day.
Is there anyone you think I should talk to?
Wow, anybody who's willing to talk to you, really. Let me see. You know what? Let me see. Oh, well, Jessica. Ooh, Jessica. You should definitely talk to the other organizer in our group.
She's here now?
I don't know. Let me see if I can trace her down.
Okay.
One of the things that people who live in vehicles in Berkeley get persecuted with is Berkeley's ordinance, BMC 1440-120, right? 14.40.120, right, which is the commercial vehicle ordinance, saying that no commercial vehicle can be parked on any City of Berkeley street between the hours of 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. for more than an hour. But in Berkeley, RVs are considered commercial vehicles, even though they're not used for commercial purposes. So people in RVs will frequently get tickets for this commercial vehicle ordinance, even though they're not commercial vehicles.
Is that true in any other city?
Probably some other cities, if they suck as much as Berkeley does, yes.
Is it a city ordinance or a state ordinance?
It's a city ordinance. It's a city ordinance that might not even be legal if you look at the state ordinance that allows, or the state laws, the statute, whatever, that allows for cities to create ordinances similar to that one. They don't actually allow for ones that are as restricting as that one. But that's a separate issue. But there's a commercial truck that parks in amongst our group. It's not used for commercial purposes, but it was a commercial vehicle. It's a big old white Ford F600 box truck parked at the end of the street. That truck, even though it had big, big blown-up pictures of our community on it, it was the display, right? It was a whole diorama, practically, of our community. At the time, it's since been reduced to just one little piece of paper that says Berkeley on it, right? But at the time, it had all these pictures of our community on the side of it. And the day that we all went and had the press conference, they gave us all warnings, courtesy warnings, forewarning us of the administrative citations that we were going to be issued that we did indeed receive the next day. The only one of us that didn't get a courtesy warning was that box truck. Even though they gave us the courtesy notices while the box truck was parked there. But the box truck definitely got an administrative citation the next day when we all got them. But a woman at the Berkeley Marina, some random person, spoke with the guy who owns the box truck the day that we all got the administrative citations, ran into him later that same day in the marina and gave him the entirety of the money to cover his citation. All $100. Because she stands in solidarity with us. It's amazing how many people in this town and in neighboring towns stand in solidarity with us. They just, not enough of them know what's going on. Nowhere near enough of them know what's going on. It really needs to be publicized more. That's why we take every opportunity we can to let people know. You know,
and it's this interview.
That it's happening. You know, people are getting persecuted and run out of town. The mayor of Berkeley actually recommended in a personal email to someone that has since become public record that we all go to Emeryville. Because the current mayor of Emeryville is formerly homeless. So it's actually legal in Emeryville right now to be homeless, especially living in a vehicle. People aren't encouraged publicly. There isn't advertisements and signs saying, hey, you're homeless, move to Emeryville, come park down here. But you'd think so, according to the mayor of Berkeley. You listen to him talk, because he actually was whining to someone. Oh, how come they can't just go to Emeryville? Said other cities need to absorb our homeless population. We can't carry the burden of everybody else's homeless population. As if nobody currently homeless in Berkeley had ever been traditionally housed in Berkeley. You know, I know a woman who had a home that she owned. She and her family owned for 50 years on 9th Street, right here in Berkeley. And then she got conned into taking one of those unreliable loans, and back in the 2008 financial crisis, and by 2013 her entire family lost their home, and her niece and their five dogs have been living, well, five and dwindling down as they age, dogs have been living in the same RV since 2013, and until about 2 months ago, when my boyfriend and I went over and gave her power system an overhaul, they had no lights inside. All the external lights worked for the vehicle, but there was no power inside, not even the 12-volt cigarette lighter to charge their phones with or anything. Yeah, until we got them lights and got their 12-volt system going, got them some solar panels and got some photovoltaic stuff going on for them just a couple months ago. They had no power from 2013 till 2018 in the same RV, one little Class A RV like this one, but smaller. It's tragic, but it's really what's really happening all over the Bay Area and in Berkeley. And for the mayor to try and shift Berkeley's homeless population off on neighboring cities, he suggested we go to Emeryville, whined about the fact we couldn't go to Emeryville, and then suggested we go to Emeryville or Albany. Where I live, I know that Albany has a oversized vehicle ordinance. You don't even have to be commercial. They don't even have to consider you a commercial vehicle. In Albany, if your vehicle is over a certain size, over a certain weight, over a certain number of axles, you're not allowed to park it in Albany, period. At all. But he actually whined and suggested that we go there. So I'm friends with the mayor of Albany currently. So I forwarded the email to her and I said, Peggy, unless you guys have really got the means and the want to absorb some of Berkeley's homeless population, maybe you should reach out to Jesse and tell him what you think. So hopefully she actually does that, because what he's doing is just wrong. He's just wrong.
Us mayors are. We've been listening to the thoughts of
Amber Whitson of Berkeley Marina Friends on Wheels.
Again, you can reach Amber, as we traditionally say at the end of each of these broadcasts, by going to...
You can look us up on Facebook at Berkeley Marina Friends on Wheels, or at Vehicle Dwellers of the Bay at Facebook. Also, Vehicle Dwellers of the Bay on Instagram. And there's a petition that people can sign at tinyurl.com/... Friends on Wheels, all lowercase.
Thank you, Amber.
Thank you.
Don't know why there are those who say I lie. Stormy Daniels smack Trump's rump like he's a bad spaniel. I'm trending all the time. Saw him there. Now my story's everywhere. It's momentous. I was anything but the apprentice. Getting worse all. Lasted a real short time, so I made him pay. The NDA was clear cut, and now every day, before more cameras, I strut. No, I shouldn't talk, it's known by all my film buffs. I can't keep my mouth shut.
And that was Stormy Daniels from the latest Capitol Steps album, Make America Grin Again.
Activists are fighting two San Diego laws they say discriminate against homeless people. One of the laws prohibits parking RVs on city streets between 2 and 6 a.m. The other prohibits people from living in their vehicles. Protesters held a demonstration today. Last year, they filed a lawsuit challenging the RV restrictions. They're hoping a judge will stop the practice of ticketing and impounding while the lawsuit progresses.
This is a terrifying thought, that the end result is that they could take away my home. I deserve to be treated with respect and dignity.
The San Diego City Council passed the RV law back in 2013. It went into effect a year later. Activists are fighting two.
And there's no need to go through that again. You get the general idea. But it's good to hear that some people are fighting back. As far as I know, Santa Cruz, in the city limits at least, still has the sort of protection of the Coastal Commission, because much of the city is in the coastal zone, which essentially requires the city to provide access to the coast. And if you make it, if you ban RVs at night parking, you're banning access to the coast unless you have other facilities for them, which currently don't exist in Santa Cruz. And it's not really about RVs, really. It's about getting rid of homeless people living in their vehicles, which Santa Cruz feels it has somehow the right to sanitize itself of. However, I haven't done any updates recently on what the city and the county are doing as far as ticketing RVs in inappropriate or illegal or questionable ways to drive them along, drive them out, or make them feel unwelcome. And if anybody has any accounts of that, please get in touch with me at the Huff line at 423-4833, and I'll pass on the word as I regularly do on these broadcasts. You can also reach, go online to the Facebook page, RV Full Timers. And here's a nasty story from Portland. From June, Portland homeless accounted for majority of police arrests in 2017, analysis finds. One in every two arrests made by the Portland Police Bureau, according to the Oregonian reporters Rebecca Woolington and Melissa Lewis, last year was of a homeless person, an analysis by the Oregonian Oregon Live has found. The number of arrests is dramatically disproportionate to Portland's homeless population. People experiencing homelessness represent a tiny fraction of the city's overall population, well below 3%, even using the biggest estimates. Yet, in 2017, they accounted for 52% of arrests. And a little more of that story. This is a long one. The arrests affect a staggering percentage of the city's homeless population. A federal survey last year found 4,177 people living outside in shelters or transitional housing in all of Multnomah County. That survey likely undercounts the true number of people who are homeless, which could be as much as three times higher. The newsroom found that 4,437 people, 260 more than the survey counted, were arrested by Portland police last year. Most often, police arrested homeless people on property, drug, or low-level crimes. The vast majority of arrests, 86%, were for nonviolent crimes, the analysis found, and more than 1,200 arrests were solely for offenses that are typically procedural, such as missing court or violating probation or parole. In the first 3 months of 2018, the disparity continued to grow. The percentage of arrests of homeless people outpaced last year's. Police Chief Daniel Outlaw, indeed, and Mayor Ted Wheeler, who serves as a police commissioner, have both said that being homeless is not a crime. I guess they just treat it like one. But the display in arrests, disparity in arrests has grown amid calls from Portland business and neighborhood leaders for police to stop street-level crime, such as disorderly conduct and drug use, outside their front doors. Police also increased searches for wanted people at homeless encampments last year. The arrests are a symptom of Portland and the federal government's failure to end homelessness. They aren't stopping people from falling into a cycle. 440 homeless people arrested last year were arrested more than 20 times since 1996. Together, they represent an astonishing 20,000 arrests over time. And they aren't helping to keep people from reoffending. 80% of the homeless people arrested last year have been arrested at least once before in the past two decades. And, of course, it's not saying what exactly they were arrested for. In Portland, for example, is it still a crime to sleep on the streets? It may well be. Arrests for that crime, of course, is a form of criminal conspiracy by the police and the city government, and a crime by those people rather than those they arrest, in my view. Advocates say arresting so many homeless people only adds to the city's homeless crisis, making it harder for people with long criminal histories to find housing, much less justice. They can be targeted by police and unhappy residents, advocates say, simply because they are living in public view. You don't say. Police can easily criminalize behaviors like trespassing that are byproducts of being mentally ill or addicted while living on the streets. And again, the notion that we can essentially characterize homeless people as mentally ill or addicted, and that's why they are criminals, may sound like a way of being compassionate and justifying behavior of people who are outside. But in fact, you don't have to be mentally ill or addicted to regularly transgress laws that are designed to drive homeless people away and that actually criminalize constitutionally protected behavior. But the Constitution doesn't really apply to the poor, I think people find. Often advocates say Portland's complaint-fueled arrests only push homeless people from one spot in the city to another. It's not a response that achieves anything, said Tristia Bauman, a senior attorney for the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, a Washington, D.C. nonprofit that works to end and prevent homelessness. It's wholly ineffective. Handcuffs haven't helped Brian Lankford. The 49-year-old has been arrested so many times so that officers often greet him by name. Last year, police arrested Lankford 7 times. In the past decade, they've arrested him 219 times. Again, they don't characterize or clarify what he's being arrested for. You're so tired of being on the streets, Lankford said. You don't really care about going to jail. Lankford says sometimes he cares about getting arrested, and sometimes he doesn't. Dozens of his arrests were for missing court, trespassing, stealing, and disorderly conduct. Dozens more were for public drinking until he stopped drinking in 2013, but he said he has since started shooting meth. Again, most of these things, if you were in your own home, they would not be crimes, or some of them anyway. That is to say, if you have no place to go to, then you drink, and it necessarily becomes public drinking. If you have no place to be, then anything you are, anywhere you are, becomes trespassing. Stealing, it's said by Anatole France that the august majesty of the laws is that the rich and the poor are equally forbidden to beg in the streets, sleep under bridges, and so forth. And that's how equal the law is. Lankford said it's easy to feel hopeless. He said he hasn't been able to find stability, housing, or steady work. He said his arrests haven't helped. After the Oregonian, Oregon Live, shared its findings with Wheeler's office, the mayor announced a June 27th forum to examine how police interact with vulnerable populations, including people who are homeless. Wheeler declined repeated interview requests for this story, as Chief of Staff Michael Cox would not say whether the newsroom's findings were concerning or surprising. From the mayor's perspective, the question is really how we can help folks who are vulnerable before it comes down to criminal activity, Cox said. He doesn't want to acknowledge that simply being homeless in Portland is criminal activity. That would be an unconstitutional thing to say and an unconstitutional thing to enforce, which, of course, is what they're doing. He said the arrests of homeless people are a sign that we as a society have already dropped the ball, perhaps a couple of times before that police interaction. As a person in charge of the police, you wonder why he's not instructing the police elsewhere to act otherwise, although I don't know who actually controls the Portland police. Portland police say they are responding to a spike in calls to 911 on their non-emergency line. Presented with the newsroom's analysis, Portland Police Deputy Chief Bob Day said he could not think of a police or city policy that would contribute to the arrest disparity. I don't see a criminalizing of that population, Day said, but there is an increasing amount of exposure and interaction with the police. It's a mystery. Day said homelessness will not be solved through arrests, and he'd rather see officers spend their time on serious crimes, not quality of life offenses involving homeless people, except, of course, that he continues to advise them to do what they're doing. Police provided the newsroom an analysis of calls to which officers were dispatched between January 1, 2017 and May 15, 2018. Numbers show that calls involving homeless people have increased since last year. In a year-over-year comparison from January to May, the Bureau found calls had risen by 12% in 2018. Still, calls involving homeless people remained a fraction of the Bureau's total workload, accounting for 8% of the 351,220 calls to which police were dispatched, and yet half the arrests? You got to really think about that one. Police say their numbers likely undercounted calls about homeless people. Data analysts searching for calls that included variations of the term. They searched for calls that included tent, camping, living in vehicle, transient, squatting, and homeless. The increase in calls is noticeable, four officers said. They say neighborhoods and businesses are relying on them to act when crimes are being committed, or someone's in public that makes somebody else nervous. They say a lack of housing, mental health, and addiction treatment also drive the arrests up. Officers could arrest more people experiencing homelessness than they do, said Central Precinct Commander Kelly Schaefer. The precinct covers downtown and inner southeast Portland, places where businesses and people living on the streets have clashed. Arrest is one way to interrupt the cycle of whatever it is they have going on in their life, Schaefer said. People who are arrested, Schaefer said, have an opportunity to seek treatment. Oh, I'll bet. Or to choose another path. You can either sleep on this sidewalk or that sidewalk. Even so, she said, connecting people to resources is often better than arresting them. Arrest is not our go-to, she said. It is our last resort. Looks like a lot of last resorting is happening around here. Police have targeted areas with homeless encampments using ATV patrols to look for people with outstanding warrants. The checks started along the Springwater Corridor in southeast Portland in 2016 and became weekly last August. Police leaders at East Precinct, which covers the Springwater, decided to increase the patrols after the Joint Office of Homeless Services reported increased assaults among campers and neighbors complained of crimes, Captain David Galladay said. Galladay said police started tracking the number of arrests made during the enforcement missions in August, but he didn't say how many may have happened. The Bureau told the Oregonian, Oregon Live, to file a records request for the information, requiring the newsroom to first pay $30 to find the answer. Police would not say how much the missions cost, requiring the newsroom to file another records request. Both requests are pending. That sounds very familiar. Jesse Sadler, 58, said he spent months living on the Springwater Corridor and saw the warrant crackdowns up close. And again, the really issue, just like with the bathroom issue, is, you know, when you hear the claim, oh, they're closing the bathrooms, of all the vandalism, the high costs, the messiness, the horror, the cleanup, but they don't give you any comparison of costs that are actually involved for cleaning up crap and piss and areas outside bathrooms that are despoiled because the bathrooms are closed in Santa Cruz. Same thing is true here. They're not letting you know what the cost of all their cleanup operations, all their busts, all their arrests are. Sadler, who has robbery, drug, and theft convictions, was wanted. He said he absconded from his probation supervision, so he made himself scarce when police rolled through the camps. The officers, Sadler said, would ask campers for identification and fingerprint people with a mobile device when they didn't have any. This, of course, is a clear violation of your rights. Imagine someone coming to your house and demanding your fingerprints when you haven't committed any crime. This story is long, and it goes on further. I would encourage people to take a look at it. It's Portland homeless accounted for a majority of police arrests in 2017, analysis finds. And it was a story posted June 27th and updated June 28th from the Portland News, but it's online. Oregon Live and the Oregonian.
folks, I'd like to sing a song about the American dream. About me. About you. About the way our American hearts beat way down in the bottom of our chests. About that special feeling we get in the cockles of our hearts. Maybe below the cockles. Maybe in the subcockle area. Maybe in the liver. Maybe in the kidneys. Maybe even in the colon. We don't know. I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white suburbanite slum. I like football and porno and books about war. I got an average house with a nice hardwood floor. My wife and my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested.
Oh no,
no way. No, I've gotta go out and have fun at someone else's expense.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I drive really slow in the ultra-fast lane while people behind me are going insane. I'm an asshole,
yo.
I use public toilets and I piss on the seat. I walk around in the summertime saying, how about this heat? I'm an asshole, sometimes I park in handicapped spaces while handicapped people make handicapped faces. I'm an asshole. I'm an asshole. Maybe I shouldn't be singing this song, ranting and raving and carrying on. Maybe they're right when they tell me I'm wrong.
A 1967 Cadillac Eldorado convertible. Hot pink with whale skin hubcaps and all leather cow interior and big brown baby seal eyes for headlights. Yeah! And I'm gonna drive around in that baby at 115 miles per hour, getting 1 mile per gallon, sucking down quarter pounder cheeseburgers from McDonald's in the old-fashioned non-biodegradable styrofoam containers. And when I'm done sucking down those greaseball burgers, I'm gonna wipe my mouth with the American flag, and then I'm gonna toss the styrofoam containers right out the side, and there ain't a goddamn thing anybody can do about it. You know why? Because we got the bomb, that's why. Two words, nuclear fucking weapons, okay? Russia, Germany, Romania, they can have all the democracy they want. They can have a big democracy cakewalk right through the middle of Tiananmen Square, and it won't make a lick of difference because we got the bomb. So, okay? John Wayne's not dead. He's frozen. And as soon as we find a cure for cancer, we're going to thaw out the Duke, and he's going to be pretty pissed off. You know why? If you're ever taking a cold shower, we'll multiply that by 15 million times. That's how pissed off the Duke's going to be. I'm going to get the Duke and John Cassavetes and Lee Marvin and Sam Peckinpah and a case of whiskey and drive down to Texas.
Hey, you know, you really are an asshole.
Why don't you just shut up and sing the song, pal?
I'm an asshole.
And that was Dennis Leary, I'm an Asshole song, recommended by one of our free radio staff from someone who should know, Merlin, who does a Tuesday night show. For those of you who like to listen to his music, a lot of original folks there. I think it starts at 8 and goes through 11, or maybe it's 9 and goes through 12. Never quite clear on that one, but I'm not sure if I should say a tip of the hat or a kick in the ass for Merlin for that recommendation. So now let's turn to the the thoughts of many at the Red Church, which I visited again last Monday, and who knows, I may show up there yet again, most likely next Monday. So there was particularly concern, at least on some of the comments, about the sextant, Steve, not Steve Plage, but another Steve, fellow who sort of is, I don't know if he serves as security, stands at the doorway and stops people from taking food out if they want to feed someone outside or take some with them. He demands people not linger outside on the grounds to talk. And as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, he's made me cranky on a number of occasions, and I intend to raise the issue more publicly, to some extent at the request of people, and you'll hear about that if this interview goes on long enough. We're kind of, it may not have enough time to play the entire interview, but I'll begin. There are other things you're going to hear about too. Many issues come up, as they usually do, and bunches of non-issues as well. So, here we go.
My name is Rich.
Rich, what's your report?
Today we discovered a new man here at the church.
Oh, yeah?
He goes by the name of Captain Mexico.
Oh, Captain Mexico.
He will harass you every chance he gets. And even though he works here at the church and he's a Christian man, he told all of us to go fuck ourselves about a half an hour ago when we were on the street, on the sidewalk.
A sexual importuning?
Oh, no, he's not that cute enough for me. I mean, sometimes I'll swing that way, but you know, something looks like that. But, yeah. So
why did he approach you?
Oh, he does this all the time. It's just,
what's his purpose? What's
to harass? He's what? He's a maintenance man here.
Talk about Steve out front.
I believe so.
Yeah, he approached me as well.
Yes, he's not a very Christ-like. He's not a very Christ-like individual. I mean, he has some problems in his life. You know, we all have the different walks, and we all have our troubles that nobody knows about. But
he's sharing his problems.
Yes,
come on,
to the homeless, but nonetheless. But I believe he should, you know, seek some counseling and, you know, talk to God and maybe find the right path eventually.
And we've been listening to the grumblings of...
the grumblings of Rich Masseri.
Thank you, Rich.
Uh-huh.
All right. Yeah. Any reports from the street?
No.
No? Okay.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Anything you want to say for everybody?
Have a beautiful summer.
Thank you. Yeah. Talking to...
James Johnson.
Thank you, James.
This week, I did have one, but I forgot, and I was going to bring it to you, too. I totally
shame
forget.
On you.
I'm going to start writing it down. I'll start writing it down.
What's going to happen? Anything happening to you you want to, you can think of right now? No. Indoors or outdoors?
Not right now. I'm just tired.
Get some rest. Or have some food. I mean,
yeah,
maybe
I am.
Both.
So. I am. But I will bring it to you.
I've been talking with... I'm Robert.
You're Robert. Deanna.
Deanna and Robert,
yeah,
both.
Robert, that's right.
Thank you, Deanna.
That's right, Robert. Yeah.
Any reports?
I just want to thank everybody, you know, for letting this activity happen for us, you know. Really appreciate it. You know, and it's just, you know, I'm just going to value it in general, and I want to thank all of you guys, you know, that have been...
Well, I'm not doing it. It's their fault. They're the kitchen cooks.
Yeah, all of them. You know, I want to thank all the kitchen, you know, staff member, everything. Like I said, everybody who volunteered been making this thing happen for us.
Indeed. And your name is?
Junior.
Thanks, Junior. All right. Want to pass on to the math of the multitude?
Well, not today. Nothing. No breaking news.
No broken news?
Broken news either.
No fake news?
No. Well, there's fake news everywhere. We know that.
yeah, probably.
Take it for granted.
Thank you, Larry.
First alarm?
You've gotten, should we say, disturbed by first alarm in the middle of the night?
Yeah, and he followed me around, bothering me.
When was this?
Last night at like 3 in the morning.
And where were you first approached?
Just like a block away from here.
And were you alone or in company?
Alone.
And how many first alarmsters?
There's just one guy in a truck being creepy.
What did he say to you, if anything?
He was just trying to make me angry.
Was he successful?
Yeah.
What did you say to him?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You were too sleepy, perhaps?
Yeah.
Did you find a place to sleep?
No, I needed to find a place to go to the bathroom.
Did you find a poo-poo place?
Yeah. Luckily.
Now, was it a poo-poo machine, or were you forced to do it in the outdoors?
I found a porta-potty that was zip-tied shut, and
Was it open?
Pop it right open.
Now, was it locked or was it just closed?
Yeah, they had them zip-tied closed.
What do you mean by zip-tied?
They used a plastic strap to shut it so you can't use it. But.
And this was about 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the porta potties that are on Cedar Street?
They had those ones in the parking lot. They were gone and by dawn, I think.
So for workers who were doing their overnight duty, but not for people of your ilk.
No, they didn't have anything for us.
And we've been talking to your adventures. What's your name?
Gordon.
If you wish to say. Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you.
All right. Any reports from the street?
Not today.
Thank you. Let me know if you do. Street reports of any kind?
Yeah, I got one. I don't say anything about it. Nothing really.
If you wish.
No.
Anything you want to say about it?
I got kind of snitched on. I was parking in the shade, and a woman come by my trailer in Vegas. Well, somebody called on me. I was under a shade tree. They thought I was drunk or something, but it's nothing.
Okay, well, I caught some of it. We've been talking with?
I'm Jerry Sperling.
Thank you, man. Should be on free radio Thursday night. How are you, madam? Are you finally able to pull it together? Any street reports?
Nothing. No, just the fact that Luis is here, and he got hit by a vehicle a few months ago, and we were there when they were putting him in the ambulance, and I can't believe he lived, and he just walked in here today.
Now, can you point out the table he's at? We're looking around the room. The line's pretty long today.
There he is in a green shirt. There's okay. Luis. Yeah. Many, many years ago, he found my dog. My dog jumped out of my RV at Holy Cross when I was at the library, and he was in the park, and he took my little chihuahua and put it back in the RV, and when I got back home, he told me what had happened. And that was many years ago.
And you've never forgiven him.
I love Luis so much, you know, and he's been a member of our community for so long. And when he got hit by that car, I was really upset. But
it
the
seems
fact
like
that
he's walking now.
Yeah, it's a miracle that he's even here. Unbelievable. Yeah.
You've been talking with
Julie Shaw.
Thanks, Julie.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing good too.
Oh, thank you. Anything?
No.
Reports? I like your beard, of course.
Thank you.
But it's always the same. I want new colors, man. Come on. Okay.
More dye.
We got purple. We got orange. More dye. Okay. I'll keep my eyes open.
Red, purple, red. Blue, purple, green. They're all faded out. So purple turned to pink.
I'm waiting to see that. And we've been talking with?
Animal.
Of course. Thank you. Now, Sonny, anything? You got a big grin on your face. You're jumping around. Are you about?
Yeah, a story for you folks. No.
He's performing, folks.
Explode that one out.
You got to see this. You can't really hear it.
I can't explode it out. Because it's very...
It's explosive?
Yeah, I'm all right, because if I explode it out...
Everyone would look at you.
Yeah, so...
Maybe you want that. You never can tell.
I don't know. Based on officers and first alarm.
It happened. You have 10 seconds before you hit the book.
All right. I have 2 charges. One, an officer gave me a ticket right over here in the parking lot. And 15 minutes later, I got arrested over there at the metro station, and first alarm laid hands on me.
I'll hear more later. Thank you, Sonny. Any reports, musician man?
No, not really.
I like your beret, of course.
Thanks. I like it, too.
Yeah. Fashionable.
Nice present.
Any reports from the street? No? Thank you. All right. Anything you want to report?
We need more toilets.
I gotcha. Anything you want to report? No? Hi there, musician woman. What are you up to?
We're just having a little meal here tonight and seeing all the familiar faces and new faces and listening to some great tunes. You know, we have brilliant musicians. Gabriel, he's going straight to the top. He is so awesome. And then we got V and Michael on piano, and they're awesome. So
what about you? Why aren't you up there?
Well, you know, we all take a turn. It's their turn.
So were you singing earlier or playing?
Well, who was it? There was another lady here that was on the guitar. And so I was just actually enjoying.
You're actually enjoying, Valerie?
Enjoying the music, yeah. I was sitting in the audience going, these guys rock.
And we've been listening to the appreciative audience.
This is Cooper. And thank you for all you do. We really love you. And you just, what you do for the people, coming out here, taking your own time.
I can't even believe myself. I'm the most wonderful guy I can ever imagine.
Well, you know, I mean, go ahead. Get it.
Thank you.
I love you.
Thank you. Anything from you, sir?
No.
Okay.
Beautiful day.
It's a pretty day. All right. Any reports from the street? Anything you wish to pass on? So you've recovered from your accident.
Oh.
How'd that go?
Ahorita estoy, ¿cómo se dice? No puedo platicar mucho porque estoy me pasó un accidente el otro día, pero no supe nada de lo que pasó porque andaba mal.
You're okay now?
Ahorita estoy bien.
Crutches?
Sí, ahí las tengo. Tengo unas muletas para caminar.
You're looking okay.
Me siento bien ahorita, pero se me pegan dolores en los pies, en el pie, pero traigo pastillas para.
Gracias, señor. ¿Cómo se llama usted?
José.
Thank you, Jose.
I'm sorry?
Anything you want to say for free radio?
I'm appreciative. I'm really new to this, and I appreciate everything that I've come in contact with. And it's what it's really done is opened my eyes to this whole community.
How long have you been outside, or are you outside?
About a year. I've been on my own.
In Santa Cruz, or?
In Santa Cruz, yeah. It's been about a year, so.
Any hassles with police or others?
No.
Really? They don't come after you with their ticket book in hand?
No. But, you know, I've been able to find some really good people, help from strangers, you know, and like I said, very appreciative of the people I've been able to meet.
We've been talking with?
I'm sorry?
Your name is?
My name? Christine.
I'm Robert. Thank you,
Robert,
Christine.
Nice to meet you.
The Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan.
Thank you, thank you. Now, as you know, the GOP recently passed historic tax reform. Now, our critics said it would never happen, that we'd have a better chance herding cats with a pig we taught to walk on stilts. But with the right tax incentives, a pig can do that. Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there about who will and won't benefit from this monumental legislation. So, I'm here today to deliver our message in the most relatable way possible. I like big cuts and I cannot lie. The Democrats can't deny. When Trump walks in with a plan you can embrace and waves cash in your face, you get sprung. Wanna buy more stuff with cash, never can get enough. The Dow Jones now is flying. More bling bling I am buying. Oh baby, do I have to draw a picture? Wanna make you richer. Democrats, they may scorn me, but that cut they hate makes me so horny. We cut your tax.
And that was the Capital Steps, another one from the Make America Grin Again. It was called I Like Big Cuts. I'm going to end the show with half an hour with Cynthia Berger on the issue of rent control and the kind of the update on what's happening with the rent control initiative, pro and con, or I should say pro and pro, with some of the cons of the con people revealed. So stay with us, and if you have questions, comments, or you want to be on the show, or you want more information about free radio, give me a call at 423-4833, and I will get back to you. That's the Huff Line, 423-HUFF. Okay, well, today is Thursday, the 26th of July, and it's around 10 to 1. I'm on the phone with Canada activist Cynthia Berger. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello.
Now,
Santa Cruz is gearing up for a fight over local rent control, as well as, of course, a state fight over abolition of the Costa-Hawkins bill. Can you kind of advise, and I think most of our listeners know before you start what you're going to say, what I'm going to say, but what are these two bills, and why is this important for people in Santa Cruz?
Well, so the ballot measure that we should be getting a letter one of these days soon that will tell people to vote yes on our measure, that is for the city, inside the city limits of the city of Santa Cruz only. That is a rent control tenant protection act, and that is a law. It's different from an ordinance, and it is passed at the ballot, and it is harder to overturn than an ordinance that is passed by a city council. That's one of the reasons that we are pursuing this as a ballot measure rather than a harmonious city council action.
My understanding, Cynthia, and I'm going to interrupt you briefly, is that this is done to some extent because it means the next city council can't just turn around and change it if it feels like they have to go back to the voters, right?
Yes, and it's often, like, really in the past, it hasn't been the next city council. It's been challenged by referenda. These decisions have been challenged by referenda in places like Richmond, Santa Rosa, Alameda, the day after they're passed. The billion-dollar landlord lobby will have petitioners on the street, and these petitioners sometimes have been paid as much as $40 a signature, and we have verification of that. And they bring them in from other places, like one place they bring them in from is Utah, companies that do signature gathering. And they get a lot of signatures, and they don't care if the people understand what the actual measure is. And, in fact, we have a video of them giving misinformation out, and a tenant advocate came across them while they were the other side while they were gathering petitions for a referendum in Alameda. And they were they took a video of them correcting the person while they were talking to the person who was going to sign this petition.
Now, anyway, Cynthia, has this also happened in Santa Cruz that we know of or not?
What?
You know, false or misleading information by anti-rent control or by rent control people for that matter.
Well, they're not collecting signatures for a referendum, so they have less opportunity to do that because it was an emergency ordinance and that cannot be overturned by referendum. And that's why what happened in Santa Cruz is really amazing and special, and we're actually grateful to the city council for voting for two ordinances with a supermajority in order to make that something that couldn't be overturned until the election, as long as we've got the signatures. So
that's an important
opportunity out there.
That's an important distinction, Cynthia, but I think also, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a movement to get people who had signed the rent control petitions to withdraw their signatures.
That was, like, tiny and insignificant.
Okay.
It didn't.
Right. Yeah, I'm just wondering, though.
I would be surprised if they got 50 or 100 at the most.
And I take it there was no documentation of either information or misinformation in that kind of get-your-name-off-this signature gathering sort of thing.
Well, most of that was intimidation towards tenants. Like, that's the main people they want, you know, to get their names off of the... that kind of thing. I don't know. I'd have participated in that without really thinking about it.
Okay, well thank you.
It wasn't significant, like I said, yeah. You know, numerically significant.
Right. I mean, I was just concerned to know how much both sides are, shall we say, pressuring people or not giving them full information. I often find when I talk to petitioners, they don't know what the hell they're doing.
The petitions phase of this is over since May 10th or 15th, and we had to submit them. So we've been in a phase two of the campaign, and that is letting folks know that we're having precinct meetings with volunteers, and we have available at these meetings people who can answer their questions about the ballot measure rent control antenna protection act. So that is the phase that we're in right now. And the there's always almost always someone who actually wrote the ordinance at these weekly precinct, you know, meetings. And so what that does is it allows us a time to distribute flyers to different precincts in the city, and that way they know that we're still working, even if they can't come to the meeting. And so that's the phase that we're in right now.
When are the
we're
next?
Also
when,
in a phase where we're doing
before you leave that, Cynthia. Before, and I want to hear about that too. But when is the next precinct meeting that people can attend if they want to, and where?
I don't know. You'll have to call me back. I'd like to give you that information, Robert, but I'm not prepared for the interview, so I don't have all this stuff.
No problem.
There'll be some this weekend, so let me call back with that information. Maybe you can splice that in or add it at the end.
Well, also, I mean, if you have a website, perhaps people could go there. Is it likely to be?
No, it's not. These are not public. These are not big public meetings. These are things that we advertise only to the precinct around that person. They're by the precinct. These are not like we're not. These are not big public meetings. These are small meetings in people's homes.
I see. So are you concerned about possibly hostile opposition from landlords? Or?
No, this is just the way we do the organizing.
Hmm.
Now, so there's not, you know, we go out every week and we deliver a lot of flyers and then some people show up. That's just how it works. That doesn't mean a million people are going to show up. And that doesn't mean if you have a big meeting, a million people are going to show up either. Basically, what we do is we deliver flyers that have information to hundreds of doorsteps.
Mm-hmm.
And these are targeted, you know, targeted people. We have a targeting system. And it all has to do with getting people out to the polls eventually to vote for the Rent Control and Tenant Protection Act for Santa Cruz.
Are these public meetings, Cynthia? I mean, can anyone come to them?
They're just for the people in the neighborhood. If you wanted to come to one, I'd have to ask the host, because this is in their personal, you know, space that they're offering to do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you were saying about radio broadcasts. Go ahead.
So there have been a couple of debates. One, I didn't know it was a debate until I showed up, so I didn't have time to prepare, and that was about 2 months ago, and that was on KZSC, and the person who usually comes to the debates, as I've seen so far, is Lynn Renshaw, who's like one of the leaders of the Santa Cruz Together group, and then someone else will come with her recently, that has been Peter Cook. Lynn is a landlady, and Peter is a realtor and landlord. So there was one last Saturday for 2 hours on KSCO, and there will be an interview this Friday night, July 27th at 7 o'clock on KSCO, 1080 a.m., and that will be with two people from the Rent Control Campaign. It's not a call-in. It's just going to be an informational interview about the rent control ordinance with a host interviewing them, and these will be knowledgeable people.
Now, the one on KSCO last weekend, that was one you were at?
I was there, and, another member of our coalition was there.
Would you recommend that the people dial the archives to check out that interview if, in terms of its quality?
In terms of its quality, I don't know. I haven't listened to it. I participated in it, so I'm not a good judge of that, but I know that the information I gave, I didn't give any wrong information. So we did counter some of the landlord's talking points that were on, that they were constantly, putting forth. And so there will be more debate. So there's one from the People's Democratic Club that will be coming up and advertised. And, yeah, so anyway, call me, and when I'm prepared, I'll give you a calendar of all the things coming up. I'm just calling you back to give you a little update, but I'm not prepared with the date.
No, I appreciate that. And you're reminding us that the next one is July 27th, 7 p.m.
Tomorrow, yeah, and that's not a debate, just an interview.
The KSCO on 1080 a.m. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And how long is that?
To the one last last Friday?
I haven't, and I was thinking of actually dialing in and checking it out. How long is this next one supposed to be?
1 hour.
Okay.
It'll be, you know, news intermittently. It's not a call-in. It's just an interview.
Mm-hmm. You know, you may remember there's been some controversy about the rebuttal arguments to the ballot, which I guess the opponents of rent control, because they missed the deadline, want to have a special agreement from the city council to put on.
Well, the law says you may not issue a rebuttal until both arguments have been submitted and shared with the opposing party. There's an election code that Gail Pellerin gave me, and I don't have it in front of me because I didn't have time to prepare for this interview really, you know, with the details, but there's an election code that Gail Pellerin told me, and I looked it up, and it says explicitly, first what happens is the arguments are submitted and they are shared with the opposing party before they go public. And so we have, you know, the city council has hired a new clerk, but they haven't given her training. There's someone supposed to be there helping her with these, you know, important election laws, and those people have fallen down on the job. And so when she has, you know, made some decisions, she must have checked with them, and they seem to have gone ahead with it. So we would say that the city council kind of blew it, and they're trying to scapegoat the clerk, Bonnie Bush, which, I mean, they know she's a new clerk. They know this is an important election, and I think that they've been not cheapskating on getting her the training that she deserves.
Cynthia, what was her error in this regard?
Well, she didn't really make an error, but she did something that is not usually done. So when the elections are consolidated, cities may choose to consolidate with the county, and that's what we do in the city of Santa Cruz. That does not mean that each jurisdiction gives up their power to set their own deadline and timeline. It just has to mesh with the county's, you know, for the final dates. So this clerk set an earlier than usual deadline, but it's not illegal, to submit arguments. We were caught also a little unaware because we were aware of the county deadline. But, you know, we got it together. We're responsible campaigners, you know, with a half a brain here that think it's an important thing to keep track of. So we got our argument in on time. They did not. So then they had sour grapes, and then they didn't want to blame anyone. They didn't want to blame themselves at all, but, you know, this is there on the website already for plenty of time. So then instead of submitting an argument late, which, you know, they submitted their argument and they called it a rebuttal. Because if you read what the city, and then the city put these things on the website, they're not even supposed to do that. So that's the one thing that I think was done that's incorrect. You're not to be sharing that. There's not to be a rebuttal according to the law unless there's two arguments. If there's only one argument, there's no opportunity for the opposing side to just rebut that argument, because then the other side doesn't get a chance to rebut their argument. But they're calling their argument a rebuttal. So that's a problem. That's not really legal.
And what is the rent control advocate group going to do about this, if anything?
Well, we're waiting to see how it shakes out. There's no meeting set by the city council. There are deadlines for when things have to be submitted, but city council members are out of town that are allowed to vote. If there's even a whiff of rent control, Chris Cron and Cynthia Matthews are now being recused. They're being told they need to recuse themselves. So I believe David Terrazas is out of town, and so they can't really have this meeting. I'm not sure if they have a quorum, but whatever it is, they seem to not be able to be scheduling this meeting, and yet.
Well,
so we don't have a date for that meeting.
What would they be discussing at this meeting if they scheduled it relevant to this issue?
What kind of answer are you looking for here?
Even though you went through it, the business about the arguments and the rebuttals, it's a little unclear to me what changes either side is looking for here.
I mean, if you want to fix everything, you need to have a meeting pretty darn soon. And if you want to say, hey, we're going to do it all over, you might be able to do that because she used an early date and they were, you know, they weren't as prepared or, you know, as we were. And these people with $1 billion of landlord money behind them weren't able to be as prepared as we were, even though they have so much more to lose in a way. And so, you know, they're going to talk about what they can do to try to get their argument out there. And we believe that they missed the deadline, and that's how it should be. That was a legal deadline, and we made it. So why should they get a do-over when they have all this money to pay all these lawyers to watch the website for the deadline? That's the first thing you do in a campaign.
So what you're suggesting then is that you would get an argument. They would get an argument, but no one would get rebuttals?
I'm suggesting it should be how it is. They didn't submit their argument. We submitted our argument, and nobody gets a rebuttal.
So it's what?
That's the way it should be right now.
So it'll be one argument, but no opposing argument and no rebuttals?
Absolutely. And okay. That's the way it should be, according to the law. But they may be allowed to do a do-over. Now we've each seen each other's arguments. And that's not supposed to be the way it works. We're supposed to submit the argument, and then at a certain time they're supposed to share the arguments with us so that at the same time, so that we have the same amount of time to write the rebuttal.
Right. I suppose what you could do is you could ask for the right to resubmit a new argument, which both of you would look at.
You know, if it comes to where they're going to overthrow democracy and open it back up for the losers, yeah, well, we're going to do everything we can, Robert. But the fact of the matter is, why should they open it back up? When we were able to get our argument, people who work for free and who don't have, you know, $100,000 behind us, not because people don't support us, but because people are paying 75-80% of their income to rent. Why should we have to suffer? Why should we have to write another argument?
Well, I can tell you what the opposing side or a person who's neutral might say, which is that if a voter wants to make a decision about what's going on and all they do is just come to the ballot box and read the arguments, they want to read two arguments, not just one. That would be the argument against your position here.
Well, there's a law. Do you think the law should be overturned? The law says how that process should go. So do you think that law is an error? If you don't follow a deadline, then things can't get printed.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is not what's, you know, what the law is. I'm saying what a naive...
I'm saying no. What I'm talking about is why the law is, not what it is.
What I'm saying is...
If you keep letting people submit things later and later,
Cynthia,
I got your
drift. But an individual voter coming to the polls, finding only one argument, might think there's something screwy going on. That's all I'm saying. And I understand.
Would they think, oh, those renters, they have so much money, they bought their way in? I mean, how would that? You know, I'm just curious. I understand what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I don't buy that that's what everybody's going to say and think. But, yes, I understand that a lot of people read that. Maybe people, Robert, will go, wow, the other side doesn't have an argument.
That's true.
Wow, maybe I should vote for it then if there's nobody against it. Isn't that in the favor? Isn't that in our favor plus legal?
Well, if you're a fan of rent control, as I think both of us are, sure. If you're a fan of democracy and you believe of a fully educated electorate, no. I mean, there's a difference. And I mean, there's a conflict here. You know, when you're on one...
Are you saying that ballot arguments is a fully educated electorate?
Well, more educated than not. That's the point, I think. But anyway, you know, I mean, I think it's good you've clarified what's going on. And of course, we don't really know what's going to happen until it does. And I think the details of this debate, which I think is a very important debate, you suggest are already partially beginning to come out on KSCO, and they'll come out again tomorrow at 7 o'clock at 1080. You know, I'm not, and you said several times, and I, don't be defensive about this. I caught you, you know, in the middle of eating a sandwich or whatever, having a snack, you know, and you're very, you know, graciously agreed to do a quick off the cuff interview. So you're not, I'm not holding you to, you know, code and line and every detail. So let me just give you an opportunity to, you know, say anything else you want to say about this, and we'll leave it there for the moment.
All right, thanks. So, you know, I am not a trained debater. Some of the people in our group are. I am a person who knows more facts than a trained debater. And so sometimes, you know, if nobody else steps forward, I am obliged to debate. But that's not my preferred role. My preferred role is to provide debaters with information and the correct answer, you know, for when there's a talking point brought forth that is you know, perhaps, you know, what's the word, prevaricating or duplicitous, you know, whatever, intimidating and stuff. So with that disclaimer, yeah. So here's the main thing that the landlords are doing is scare tactics towards renters and scare tactics towards homeowners and landlords. And the scare tactic towards renters is, oh, there's going to be less rental housing. All these terrible things are going to happen. Like, you're not going to be able to find a place if you're over 62 or if you're disabled. That is so patently ridiculous because those people have been, I run a tenants' rights hotline and people call me all the time and I have a really good pulse on what's been going on with displacement the last 3 years in the community. Those people who are on fixed incomes, whether they are disabled or senior citizens, they cannot find a place to rent here. Nobody cares about them being in the community. They care about their wallet and getting the most rent that they possibly can. So that is already happening here, and what we are putting forward in our rent control law are some protections. If you are already in a place and you are a senior, that's about all that rent control can do. Rent control doesn't promise to fix everything that's wrong. What rent control does is it helps people to stay put where they are, and that provides for more diversity in the community with more disabled people or more older people otherwise that are not high income. Otherwise, you have a city here now that is old people and people under 25 and zero in the middle. But then there's a lot of people between 18 and 25, actually, and then there's 60% people between 0 and 18 children in the city of Santa Cruz than in the city of Watsonville. And this is the vision that the people who are gentrifying the city have for the city because this maximizes their profit. So, you know, we just say that this argument that you're not going to be able to find a place if you're disabled or a senior is just specious because you already can't, and this is actually going to protect you. And then another thing they say is rents won't go down. Our ordinance actually says rents will be rolled back to a date in October 2017. So, yes, many people's rents will go down. So that is just an outright falsehood. Another thing that is said is every single person who is selling their house right now, that it, and it's if they're selling their rental property right now, is doing it because they hate rent control and they don't want to own a rental during rent control. That's so silly because Santa Cruz has such high rents, and a lot of people who own rental property bought it a long time ago, and it's all paid off. So not only could they be charging a lot less and still be making a great profit because it's already all paid off, they choose to charge at the very highest rent and make extreme profits, and that's called gouging, and that's because housing is scarce, you know. And so people who are selling their houses right now, they're not selling because they want to get out of the rental market. That's just a lie. They're selling them. Most people selling their house right now is because their houses just went up to the average selling price is $950,000, nearly $1 million. Every time the price of a house goes up like that, people sell their house to cash in. But the other side says, oh, I'm a realtor and I just talked to five people. And it's like, you know, you can claim whatever you want. Prove it to me. Have those people debate. These are just scare tactics, they're not based in truth. We have data from several different rent boards around the state, like Berkeley, Richmond, Santa Monica, San Francisco, places like that. And this data shows that when rent control was first passed, less than 2% of rental units were taken off the market, and there was no way to prove that that was due to rent control. So this is another empty threat that has tenants really concerned, but it's just not true. So if rents are not going to go up, some of them are going to go down. Hmm. There's not going to be fewer rentals due to rent control. Fewer rentals might be due to people wanting to cash in on their billion-dollar property, you know. Hold on. Yeah, people want to cash in on the million-dollar property, and that happens every time the housing prices go up in Santa Cruz. So that's not due to rent control. It just happens to be. And isn't it interesting that the housing prices have gone to their highest and ever during a rent control campaign? Isn't that interesting? Is that really because people are cashing out? I think it's because people are cashing in.
Let me ask you for some questions you think about for maybe a future interview, since this probably requires more research or more reflection. Maybe not. Recently, at our HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, we had a guy coming who's been working with you on concerns about Section 8 rent profiteering or improper rent activity by Encompass in Section 8 housing. I haven't got much to say about
that. I really couldn't comment on someone's private.
And I'm not asking you to comment on any particular case, but upon the impact of rent control on Section 8 housing generally. That's
Well, we feel that one thing I can say is, like, there was just a report in the newspaper that the head of the housing authority claims that there are more Section 8 landlords than previously. I'd really like to see the data. I feel that she wants to justify her salary living in a place where there's nothing for Section 8 people, and so she might have found a few. But I don't, you know, I want to see the data before I'm going to believe that. So Section 8, you can see it every day, all day, no Section 8. That's not illegal, apparently, in the state of California. It is not illegal to discriminate on the basis of income.
And the next question, Cynthia.
It's already happening. It's not going to make it any worse. Why would it make it any worse?
Gotcha. I'm interested also in, we've talked a bit, I have anyway, about the Costa-Hawkins Act, but there's also an earlier act in the mid-80s called the Ellis Act, which has impacted apartments and housing. And at some point, and I don't suggest you need to do it now, I'd like to you or a rent advocate, rent control advocate, to go into that. So maybe in a future interview we can talk about that, as well as more information about, you know, how this particularly impacts low-income
maybe
people.
Maybe you want to talk to somebody who wrote the book on rent control, because that stuff is like... Yeah, there's not going to be anybody in our campaign that's going to be able to go into detail with you about that. I can tell you that right now, but I can tell you about the Costa-Hawkins Act and the Ellis Act a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's... I mean,
one thing I would like to say is that the main reason that rental property... the price of rentals goes up in the state of California is the Costa-Hawkins Act. Because as soon as somebody moves out... It allows that property to go to the so-called market rate, which is actually far above any fair market rate, into a gouging stratosphere.
That's called vacancy decontrol.
Yes, it's called vacancy decontrol, and that's in this Costa-Hawkins Act. And there are other parts of the Costa-Hawkins Act that apply to that say which units, that they reserve some units that you say that you can't cover these by rent control, and then those are anything built after 1995 and any single family home and any condo. And so that also contributes to the failure of rent control, because there's no local control over what can actually be covered.
What about the Ellis Act? Let me ask you about that.
Go up in California is the Costa-Hawkins Act, especially in rent-controlled areas.
What about the Ellis Act, Cynthia?
The Ellis Act is an owner move-in, and it allows an owner to take over a multi-unit property that otherwise, you know, would be covered by rent control. But I don't know the details of it, so like I said.
Well, why don't we leave it there?
It's not owner move-in. Owner move-in is a part of our rent control.
Okay, well, let's hear about that.
Tenant Protection Act as well. But the Ellis Act, has some...
Right. Well, as I said, if you're not familiar with it, I'm not going to ask you to make like you are. And I will invite listeners...
Well, I know it's about owner move-in, man, and it's about getting, an owner that wants to take a multi-unit property off the market and make it into, like, their own single-unit property or make it into condos that can't be covered by rent control. Basically, they want to convert a covered, property into an exempt property.
And is that going to be impacted at all by your ordinance? Or your law?
Well, that's a state law, so we can't really change the state law. That's why that has to be repealed. That's why Proposition 10, it's very important that everyone vote yes on Proposition 10. Yes on Proposition 10 means yes, local control for affordable housing.
At least as far as Costa Hawkins goes, but not as far as the Ellis Act goes, right?
I don't think that it specifies the Ellis Act, but I'm not sure. I don't want to put that information out there.
No problem.
I don't know.
I'm going to leave it there, Cynthia, partially because of time constraints, but also, to give you a chance to, if you are interested, to bone up on some.